Hi guys, welcome to our podcast about the Scarlet Abyss. I'm Hannah, and my partner over here is Mags.
My
opinion on this book is that it was a great read if you're able to keep your emotions in check. It really shows you the beauty and delicacy of life around us.
Hi guys, it's Mags, and I thought that this story was really sad. Like, at first I thought, oh, this is going to be a great story about how two siblings, like, come together, even though the one sibling's disappointed that his brother can't do everything. And then, as I kept reading towards the end, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so sad. Like, I couldn't imagine having to go through that with my brother. That would just be awful.
All right, let's get this podcast started.
All right, just like last time, we're going to read through a thematic lens, and the lens we chose is guilt.
So, we have some questions put together for you, and we want to hear your answers. So, here's the first question. What makes you feel most guilty?
The second one is, what is a way you cope with guilt?
The third one is, what feeling comes with guilt? Is it ashamed, sad, satisfaction, nothing, or understanding?
The next question is, how long does that guilty feeling stay with you? Would it be a day, a week, a month, or does it just go on and on until you make it up to somebody or until you find a way to cope with it?
All right, our last question is, how do you feel once you have resolved your guilt? Are you happy, relieved, upset, or do you just not feel anything?
We hope that you enjoyed this little guilt test, and tell us what you think about it. And if you answered yes to some of these questions, then maybe you do feel guilty. Maybe you need to go make it up to somebody. If you answered no to everything, or nothing, or upset, I don't know what to say. All right, we're going to do a 30-second summary, which means we basically have to talk really fast, just like we did in the last episode. And we're going to sum up the story the best way we can. So let's get to it. 3, 2, 1, go.
So this book is about two brothers, and the older brother wants a little brother really badly. And when his baby brother is born, he finds out that he's a cripple. And he's really upset with that and tries to kill him. And then after that, he learns to love this little boy, and he starts teaching him how to walk and gets super proud and just is really happy about his brother and his accomplishments. And then one day they go down to start rowing because he's going to start school and doesn't want the other boys to make fun of him. And it starts raining, and when they're rowing, he leaves his brother, and his brother has a heart attack, and it explodes, and I'm
done.
Out of time. All right, so we're going to count it down for Mags. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so this short story is about a boy who really badly wants a brother, and then his brother's born. His brother is paralyzed, and he wants to teach his brother how to do a ton of things, and he wants to be able to play with his brother, but he's ashamed of his brother, so he decides he's gonna suffocate his brother to death one day. And then he sees that his brother is fully there, so then he doesn't. And then I don't know what to say anymore. He goes out and he teaches his brother a bunch of things, but he feels guilty afterwards. And then one day his brother dies because he does too much.
Done. So guys, we want to hear what you thought of our 30-second summaries. Personally, I believe mine was better. Mags didn't get all her words out. So
okay, I still got the base point of it, I think.
All right, we want to hear from you guys. So tell us what you think.
So we think that this story is about guilt and how it's acquired through painful and important lessons.
So now we're going to look at some quotes out of this book, and we're going to look at them through the thematic lens of guilt. Our first quote is, "Finally, I could see that I was lit. Doodle was my brother, and he was going to cling to me forever, no matter what I did." That is from page 345. So my ideas about this quote is, this brother finally comes to the realization that Doodle is going to always love him no matter what he does to Doodle, and that he was really being mean to his brother for no reason.
Yeah, I think that I feel the same way. Also, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but it's liked, not licked.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, I think Doodle, like, saw past what his brother did. He was able to look and say, my brother just doesn't know what to do because he doesn't understand how I feel, type of thing. Like, if that was, like, kind of the mindset Doodle had, I think. But I think Hannah hit the nail on the head and got that point right. Oops. All right, so our second quote relating to Yelp is, for heaven's sake, what's the matter? I asked, annoyed. It's so pretty, he said. So pretty, pretty, pretty. After that day, Doodle and I often went down into Old Woman's Swamp. That's from page 346 from Hearst's short story. That was a mouthful. So, the way I look at this, I see, like, that brother finally realizes how Doodle felt about things. Like, he took something for granted if he doesn't appreciate it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, I had a little confusion. Anyway, so he just is like, oh yeah, it's there. It's, like, just there. And Doodle didn't really get the chance to, like, enjoy it like his brother did, even though his brother didn't know how much he was enjoying it. So when Doodle goes out there and sees, he's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And that's when brother finally realized that Doodle really was a normal kid. He just couldn't walk.
I also feel that when Doodle's talking about how pretty it is, the brother doesn't really understand that Doodle hasn't been able to see this stuff. Like, oh, he's been looking out a window. But, you know, if you've ever sat inside because you're sick and you see, like, I don't know, pretty, like, snowfall, or it's beautiful and sunny outside and you're sick and you're staying inside, that's when you really take the indoors, like, it kind of becomes sad and depressing and you don't really realize it until you're back outside. So the brother feels guilty about yelling at his brother Doodle for just being happy about finally being able to experience what the outside is like.
Yeah, I like the example Hani used too with the snow, because when I'm sick or something and I'm sitting inside and my brother gets to go to skiing, I'm like, oh my gosh, the only thing I want to do right now is go outside. And I feel like that's how Doodle felt, so Hani was right again.
Our third quote is from Hearst's story again, on page 347. It says, Doodle walked only because I was ashamed of having a crippled brother. This really sums up our thematic lens of guilt, because the older brother feels guilty about forcing Doodle to walk, and something good came out of his ill will towards his brother. And since he remembers that feeling of guilt, like, oh, I forced my brother to walk because I was embarrassed of him, he couldn't really celebrate and rejoice that his crippled brother is now walking with the rest of his family.
Yeah, that I think that's pretty much what it's saying. But I also feel like he knew what he did was wrong, and he wanted to, like, not feel guilty about it. He wanted to tell people, like, oh, this wasn't because I'm a good brother. This is because I'm the worst brother. Like, he felt so awful. But he also didn't want to ruin it for Doodle, I feel like. Like, I feel like everything he does that's, like, even though it may be because out of selfishness or embarrassment, he is starting to love his brother more. So because of guilt, those two brothers are becoming closer. All right, our fourth quote is on page 351. And it is, on the topmost branch, a bird the size of a chicken with scarlet feathers and long legs was perched precariously. And I feel like the second I read that is when I really started to realize, like, oh my gosh, this book is not as, like, cuddly and, like, brother-like as I thought it was going to be. It's turning into a sad book, because as soon as I read that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like something awful is going to happen in this book. And I feel like the brother doesn't realize earlier in the story that, like, everything is special, and he looks at the bird, he's like, oh my gosh, that bird just died, like, he was super uncomfortable. But when his brother dies later in the story, he's like, oh my gosh, I just basically killed my brother. But he doesn't think that about the bird, because he doesn't try to help the bird, and he didn't try to help his brother either. But he doesn't connect the two, and I feel like it's a, like, big foreshadowing moment and a big connection between the two.
I totally agree with Mags that it's a foreshadowing event. And I'm sorry to all of you who haven't finished the story that Mags just spoiled it for you.
Well, I'm sorry. I kind of had to if we're kind of talking about the book here.
So, once again, I agree that it was foreshadowing, because we all know that Doodle
isn't built like the rest of us. His legs are a little thinner and his neck is a little longer. And this bird just kind of really represents Doodle's spirit, most likely. All right,
people, let's do some four-tiered reading here. So we're going to go through, just like in our last episode, and we're going to talk about how we felt about the story and what was given to us right off the bat, and then what we kind of looked into and saw when we looked a little bit deeper. So let's get to it.
Our quote for this four-tiered reading adventure is, he lay very awkwardly with his head thrown far back, making his vermilion neck, vermilion if you don't know means bright red, appear unusually long and slim. His little legs, bent sharply at the knees, had never before seemed so fragile, so thin. That's from Hurst's Scarlet Book again, and it's on page 354. So our tier one for this quote is going to be what's literally happening, like the details of the story. So what I picked out were the most important details of this quote were, he's really trying to just get his mind to process the fact that his brother is dying. So this is kind of his mourning process of like looking around, kind of summing up what happened to his brother. And then the next part that hit me was, he's comparing his brother, this little boy, to the dead bird that happened earlier in the story. They both have red on them. The bird had red feathers, but it was Doodle's blood. They were both small and innocent. They both had legs that were frail and thin and looked like they would be hard to walk on. And then the last detail that I picked out was he was upset at himself for leaving his brother. He was really beating himself up for being like, I left my brother kind of like I left that bird.
Yeah. I think Hannah took the words right out of my mouth when she was talking about how the bird was in comparison to Doodle. And I also feel like when brother was looking at Doodle, he just saw, like, he started to realize that his brother wasn't the same as everybody else. But before, like when he taught his brother to walk, he looked at it, his brother, and was like, oh, he's just my brother. He's walking, he's playing, he's running. We're doing everything like two normal brothers would do. But as he looks closer and thinks about it more, he's like, oh my gosh, my brother wasn't exactly the same as I am. And he had different limits, and he lived a different way than I did. So it's not always the way it looks at first. I don't know why I just clapped my hands. Anyway, so on to tier two. When you look into the story, what do you see? What kind of symbolism in there? What kind of figurative meanings are there? So when I look at this, the first thing I think of is that life is precious. And I know that seems kind of cliche or whatever you want to say about it, but it really is true. Like, he just was happy he had a brother. I mean, he felt guilty about it and all, but he loved his brother after a little while. But he didn't see, like, his brother was so, like, he took his brother for granted. I think I said that right. I am having a lot of trouble. Anyway.
So I agree with Mags that when you say life is precious, it really is. I mean, you hear it all the time. Like, wherever you go, you're like, oh, life is precious. It's short and short-lived. But this story really sums it up to the point. And I think that we can sum that, like, when I think of this, I kind of think of a fruit fly. I mean, it's kind of weird, but fruit flies don't live that long. They live a span of, like, 7 days. They're born, they eat, and then they die. I mean, think about it. This is kind of what reminds me of Doodle. It's kind of reminding me of the fruit fly. But, I mean, we can also take it, and like we said in our last tier, it's comparing to the bird. I mean, that was a very obvious comparison. The bird was special. It came from Florida, and it ended up in a place where a bird wouldn't be. Kind of like Doodle, he came into this home where they weren't expecting to have a crippled brother. They were expecting some strong, buff boy that was going to be able to carry the load just as well as his father and his older brother were.
And that just wasn't the case, but they still learned to love him.
Time for tier three. This is a personal reflection on the sentence it picked
It means kind of like, what does it mean to you? Or in this case, me. How can it, you see the concept in the sentence playing out in my real life? So what this reminds me of is a story my parents would tell me when I was little. So when I was little, I had this chocolate lab named Rowan. And he was my parents' one of their wedding gifts when they got married. And he was growing up, and so I grew up with them when they had me. For me, this dog was important to me because he helped teach me how to walk, my parents said. They said I would like grab onto his ears and nose and just kind of like pull myself up and like just stand there. And the dog wouldn't really run away, and it wouldn't try to like bite or snap at me because I know it loved me. So he taught me how to walk, and that kind of set me up for a good start in life. I mean, it's something that we all needed to learn, but I feel like it might have been a little harder for me if my dog wasn't there to help me walk. So that's what this sentence, that's how I personally reflect on this sentence onto Meg's. All
right, when I look at this, I think of a lot of things. And something I think about a lot is like, if I didn't have all those people, like, I can't imagine what would happen if I didn't have my little brother. Like, I couldn't imagine what would happen if I didn't have my parents or my dogs or the rest of my family, my aunts, my uncles, my grandparents, my cousin, everybody. But it also makes me think, like, if I look at somebody, and I know I do this without trying, it just, it happens sometimes. And I know everybody does. They judge people. And, like, when I do that, and then I see that these people are trying to be the best they can be, I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Like, when I was in seventh and eighth grade, I think.
Yeah.
We did this event called the special, we had a Special Olympics basketball game where us as basketball players played against a Special Olympics team. It was a ton of fun. We had a blast. And all those people were so nice. And just looking at them, you could see, like, all they want out of life is to be happy. And, like, sometimes we probably look at those people like, oh, they can't do the same thing we can. But, I mean, first of all, they were all nice. And second of all, they were also incredible basketball players. Like, they actually beat us.
Multiple times.
Yes.
They were also not bragging about it. Like, the brother, he seems like he was like, he didn't want to take the time to be like, oh yeah, I taught him. But we all know he really wanted that glory. Inside, he was like, oh yeah, I taught my brother, but I taught my brother in a bad way. These people, I'm comparing it to that basketball game that I was talking about. When they made a shot, they wouldn't be like, oh yeah, we made a shot against you guys. They'd come over and whoever was trying to block their shot, they'd come over and give you like a high five and be like, oh, good try. Or they'd come over and they'd give you a hug and they'd be like, you did really well. They weren't like, oh my gosh, we made a shot and you guys weren't able to block it.
Yeah. And one more thing I think about is this girl from our school, our middle school. Her name was Audrey. And the family, she was born with Down syndrome, but she was the sweetest girl. And she died because she got really sick. But everybody looks at her and remembers her and sees her as, like, that girl who was always smiling, who always had fun, who always wanted to be with her siblings. And that's what this story makes me think of, too. Like, just looking at her, we should always be that happy to see everybody. Tier 4 time. How can we apply this and take lessons from this story and put it into our lives? All right, so I think right off the bat that I should stop taking advantage of those moments where, like, if it's easier to see the bad, just go with the bad. Or, like, when I see those moments, like, oh yeah, I can be the one that changes the world, or I can be the one that makes the difference. But it's out of a selfish way. I should stop doing that. I should see, like, oh, this person, like, this would mean the world to them if they got the chance to do it. So I should go and let them take the opportunity. And I can just try to help out in the small ways. And because when I do take those big chances, I'm like, what if I let somebody else take it? Maybe they could have done it better than me. Maybe that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. And then I start to think, like, this wasn't meant for me. And I start to feel bad. Like, that person could have made a bigger difference than I could have, but because I wanted to do it, I did it.
All right, so what this calls me to do is it's gonna sound cliche, but it reminds me that life is really short and that
life may be hard and it may like push us around and it may get us down, but we need to try and live life to the fullest. And I know it's hard, and especially I know where I'm at in high school, being a freshman, and you're looking up and you're like, since for me I play sports, I'm like, oh my gosh, all these kids are so much bigger than me and probably stronger than me and faster than me. It makes me feel like, oh, maybe I just shouldn't play the sport I love, or maybe I shouldn't be in all these honors classes. But it reminds me that I need to do what I love. And if I love this sport, then I need to play and I need to work hard for it. Or if I love this class, then I need to take it seriously and I can't be like, oh, well, they're doing it, they'll do it better than me because they're older. I need to just think about it as, I love this class or I love this sport and I need to live it to the fullest, because I know when I'm dying, I'm going to regret and be like, well, I wish I would have, because you just need to live life to your fullest. And fullest has a different definition for everyone. It'll be different. My definition of fullest is going to be different than Mags's, and Mags's will probably be different than her brother's. So that's what it calls me to do. Back to Mags.
I also think, like, you shouldn't be ashamed. If you see that you have the opportunity to do the right thing, don't be ashamed, because I feel like if you don't take that chance, you can be like, oh, I should have, like, I should have stood up for that person, or, oh, I should have helped that person out, or even, like, oh, I shouldn't have done this. But don't take that chance that you know is the right thing to do, because you'll never have that exact opportunity again. If you take every little opportunity, who knows how far we could go.
So, as you guys know, we had you take that guilt quiz at the beginning of our podcast. So, the results are in, and we wanted you guys to hear what some of the results were, and here they are. So,
mind
for
you,
our first question.
Mind you, this is totally anonymous. So, yeah, just so you all know. So, some of the responses for the first question, what makes you feel most guilty, was hurting someone you love, lying, failing, sinning when you know it's wrong, doing something very bad and not telling anybody, taking jokes too far, and hurting others that don't deserve it. Now, I think that one applies really well to the story. Like, I feel like that's a good example.
All right, so our question two most popular answers were, what are ways you cope with guilt? The answers were, they apologize, they come and clean up what they did, they ask for forgiveness from that person, they tell the truth and ask others for help, they exercise, play video games, and try to do anything to get their mind off the problem, which I feel isn't the greatest or most healthy way to get your mind off of guilt. A lot of other popular ones were crying, confessing, punching a small swinging bag and crying, ignoring it, confessing it, either doing the things that you like doing or making it up to the person and trying to make it right for them. So I feel like the answer that really applies to this story would be asking for forgiveness. I know that Doodle isn't around anymore, but he can still apologize to Doodle and be like, Doodle, when I see you again, I'm sorry, please forgive me.
I also feel like the one that was like ways to get your mind off of it more, like playing video games and stuff like that. Maybe like they want to like relax themselves, so maybe they can go and confess. Maybe like it takes them a little bit because they don't know how to say it. Like, I know how I have that problem if I'm trying to apologize to someone. Next question. What feelings come with guilt? I think the most popular one people said was ashamed, and I feel the same way personally. But others said, like, sad or, like, undeserving or even a hollow pit surrounded by scalding poison. Like, just, I'm going with absolutely terrible.
All right. Our next question is, how long does that guilty feeling stay with you? So the majority answers, it depends on the situation. I agree, I know guilt has stayed with me for like an hour till I apologize to that person, or until or if they maybe don't live near me, or I only see them once in a great while, then I feel guilty until they can come back and I can apologize to them. The next biggest category that people say guilt stays with them is until they make it up. And right next to that is in certain areas, it can come back years later, and that has happened to, like, people before. And
happens to me.
I know. It's a weird feeling. Like, if you just kind of look past it, then it'll definitely come back to you. The next most populars were a month and a week. So, yeah.
Everybody's different. They all have different, like, ways to deal with it and different ways to get rid of it. I think that made sense. And how do you feel once you resolved your guilty feeling, like when you apologize or different ways to cope with it? A lot of people said relieved, which I feel like that perfectly describes how I feel. I don't know about Hannah, but...
Yeah, most of the time it's relieved. Or yeah. I agree with our second most popular is, like, nothing at all. Like, because I feel like sometimes emotions can get so big or so mixed that you just kind of don't feel anything. So
yeah.
I know after I feel guilty, I'm like, and I, like, apologize to them or make it right, I'm like, I feel happy. I feel relieved. I'm still upset at myself. And maybe I'm, like, still mad at that person, but I just wanted to make myself feel better by apologizing. So I agree with the nothing / relieved category.
Yeah. All right. So that's all we have for guilt quizzes.
All right. If you still want to take the quiz and you've heard some of these answers, the polls are still open. You can take it if you want. Bye.
All right. So next we're going to give, like, a little prayer / blessing to a character of our choice. And I felt like I needed to choose Doodle. And I picked that because I feel like he just saw the good in everybody. Like, he didn't... I mean, he saw the bad, but he ignored the bad. He just looked for the good in every person, even his brother. Like, when he didn't tell their mom that his brother was basically tipping him over in the wagon. And I feel like everybody can learn that. Like, his loyalty to his family and his brother. And he just... really, like, showed it to everybody how kind he was. And in everyday life, like, when you see somebody, don't just, like, say, it's like somebody you know, don't just say, oh, they did something mean to me, so I'm not gonna be their friend. Or, like, if you have somebody who wasn't nice to you, still keep trying to be their friend. Don't, like, just say, oh, yeah, whatever, they did something mean. Be like, oh, yeah, maybe they didn't realize they were doing something wrong.
Alright, so my prayer / blessing person is for Aunt Nicey. She was there when Doodle was born, and I'm blessing her because she was always looking out for both boys, no matter what they did. I mean, she probably knew that Doodle was special, but she probably also knew that the brother was a little upset at her at Doodle for being crippled and not being what she wanted. She was also always there for both of them and never gave up on the idea that they were both special. In real life context, this person kind of reminds me of my mom because I have a younger brother as well, and we're not crippled, neither of us are, but I mean, she still thinks that we're both special, and me and my brother have very different tastes, but she won't stop believing that we'll both do amazing things and that we're both very special.
All right, so this is the last end of our little podcast, and I'm so sad that it's over, but I'll see you next time.
Till next time, guys.